an administrator, et cetera, versus a quad company in another. Michael J. Bessie, appellant, counsel, John C. Johnson, appellee, counsel.
You may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is Michael Bestie. I represent Marcello Carrington, the administrator of Cornell Carrington. Your honors, this is a very narrow issue in the Workers' Comp Act. Mr. Carrington was my client. He was injured, sustained a left arm injury, a tricep tear, which left him unable to use his left arm at work. That partial disability was one of two causes of his ultimate inability to work thereafter.
That was one of two causes? But for the kidney failure, would he have been able to remain employed?
Your Honor, there was light duty available to him, and it was provided to him within his partial capacity to do so.
So were it not for the kidney failure, he would have remained employed?
He may have remained employed. In his testimony, I believe he testified that he did not anticipate. I believe he said no, that he would not still be working was his understanding. But in any event...
But the reason why he couldn't remain employed was because of the kidney failure. So how are there two causes? There's one cause.
And I understand your point, Your Honor, and I've thought about it for a long time.
Three commissioners held and three court of appeals judges held, and they're far more knowledgeable than I am on the subject.
And I would submit, Your Honor, that the baseline, the pre-injury employment, is what we're looking at, or what I asked the court to look at. And there's two reasons that Mr. Carrington could not do his pre-injury work, which included lifting heavy bathtubs. Manual labor for many years, since 1992. He could not do that pre-injury job for two reasons.
But he had already returned to full employment at light duty, and but for the kidney failure, he could have stayed in full employment at light duty. So the two causes rule is two causes simultaneously converging and creating a disability. And the law quite humanely says, you know, we're not going to sit down with a slide rule and figure out what the percentages are, as long as they're substantially connected. But this is a sequential thing. He was completely employed, 100% employed in light duty, and something completely unrelated to work later made him disabled. What am I missing? I mean, I'm missing something from your perspective, and I've read all your briefs.
The Doan case, Your Honor, in which... There was the timing was distinguished, whether it is a pre-existing condition or a condition that arose after the accident. And here, it was ultimately determined that this was a progression of the pre-existing condition.
But Doan was a pre-existing condition that was symptomatic and had an effect on disability, and it combined with the work-related injury. And that is, it distinguished that in Doan. That scenario in Doan. And the point is, when two causes converge, we don't require precise mathematical separation of what percentage got to 51% preponderance. But why are we having that here? We don't have two causes converging at all. There's only one cause.
And Your Honor, again, I would submit that there's two causes of Mr. Carrington's incapacity to return to his pre-injury job, which I submit as the standard under McKellar and decided by this court several years ago, in which 65.2500 was analyzed as an incapacity from work rather than the economic loss. In Doan, there was a compensable back injury, and it was completely unrelated carpal tunnel syndrome that rendered the claimant unable to work, and the Supreme Court had held in that case that an employer is absolved of liability for compensation if the employee refuses selective employment because of a physical condition unrelated to the original industrial accident and arising since the accident. Again, we would submit that that timing is very important, as the commission has held in several cases, in Orange, for instance, which was cited in appellant's brief, in which a pre-existing condition had progressed to the extent that that claimant could no longer work as a carpenter in that instance. And
but in all those kinds of cases, the pre-existing condition was not asymptomatic or dormant. It was symptomatic and actually had an effect on the disability rating of the person. And that disability effect was compared and contrasted with the work-related condition, right? So as the commission unanimously held in this very case, yeah, right, of course we do that. That's the classic example of the two causes rule, but that's not what we have here.
And respectfully, Your Honor, I would submit that in many of these cases, Orange, for instance, there was not a pre-existing limitation due to the pre-existing glaucoma. That's something that had progressed thereafter. The same thing in Alonzo, which turned on ultimately the back condition, the pre-existing unrelated back condition was found to be aggravated. However, the commission stated that even if the conditions were unrelated, the application must fail, again, because of these timing issues. And Justice Kelsey, I would ask you to, I would cite Ledbetter v. Penkowski, 21 VA at 427 in 1995 as well, which case I did not cite in the brief. It's something I found thereafter, where there was a, and it's a little different, but I think that the attenuation that you're concerned of may be addressed there, where there was a work-related foot injury.
You said it's not in your brief. Have you provided opposing counsel with that case so he's prepared to discuss it?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I have not.
Okay. I mean, I just point that out. It's helpful when we know what to look at in preparation as well as fairness to opposing counsel. So I'll just point that out for a future reference.
Thank you, Your Honor. And I will submit that certainly that wasn't intentional. It was something that I kind of stumbled on last minute.
Understood. Yeah, you're preparing for argument. You see things. Understand that.
And in that case,
but your use of it here is intentional. That's the point.
I'll move on.
And we actually have a rule on the subject. And your reference to it is in violation of that rule. Move on.
Thank you, Your Honor. The gradual progression was something that the commission had cited as the cause as well. I would like to talk about as the cause of this kidney failure, the cause of the total disability. The pre-existing condition was clear that Mr. Carrington had sustained polycystic kidney disease. He had suffered from it since 1992.
The commission's opinion made an observation. And again, the commission has some policy aspect to their interpretation by statute of the statute they've been given to administer. And their point was, you know, if we allow this concept to work in your case, that would mean everybody with pre-existing wholly asymptomatic conditions would find themselves at risk of being pushed out of employment, not being given employment, because the argument would be if you were to win a case like this and change this, the role of the two causes rule, that it would basically, well, they said it in their opinion, it would make every employer into a health insurance provider, which would be pretty devastating. So, once again, a unanimous commission, not a single dissent, even the employee's designated commissioner didn't dissent, said this is pushing two causes too far. Why exactly are they wrong?
Your Honor, I would cite Doan and the timing aspect, the timing mechanism in Doan. I would cite the Hall case, which is cited in the brief for the proposition that you take your employee as you find them. And I acknowledge that it's a difficult case. The other end is employer manipulation, and that's something that the commissioner that authored the opinion had addressed as well, a concern for that potential manipulation. Commissioner Newman I wrote, an unprincipled employer could manufacture an unjustified refusal by offering light-duty work and incompatible with an employee's pre-existing physical limitations. In such a scenario, an injured employee would be placed in an untenable position of either accepting work they were unable to perform or risk the loss of disability benefits by refusing the job. I'd submit that the benefits and purposes of the Act, liberal construction of the Act, would follow that this gentleman could no longer use his arm in the workplace.
But if I may interject, Commissioner Newman, the very next sentence is, quote, however, comma, our holding in the present case does not implicate this policy or invite employer misconduct as the claimant had no pre-accident restrictions associated with his longstanding kidney condition. Isn't that a very precise response to the concern that Commissioner Newman wanted to answer?
Understood, Your Honor, and I believe that the pre-existing condition is just one of two prongs. The other is the employer's knowledge. The employer knew in this instance that Mr. Carrington had these pre-existing kidney conditions. He was out of work for 4 months for his initial kidney transplant. He had gone to Richmond, to VCU, periodically to treat as well. And I understand and I'll concede that there were not limitations immediately before that work accident in connection with the kidney. However, there were in the past instances in which he could not work because of that kidney condition. If there's no further questions, I would like to reserve the remaining time for rebuttal.
All right.
May it please the Court, Your Honors. My name is John Johnson, and I stand for Aquatic Company and its insurer. We submit that the Court of Appeals did not erroneously disregard Doan and his progeny when it held that the two clauses rule did not apply below. The facts are not in dispute. The facts have been as narrowed as any case I have ever participated in. The salient point of the stipulated facts was that the claimant was released, Mr. Carrington was released, to light-duty restrictions of no lifting with his left arm from November 15, 2013, and continuing in connection with the workplace accident. And the employer, as Justice Kelsey noted, the employer provided light-duty work at his regular wages. There was no wage loss until his hospitalization for what is admittedly an unrelated kidney rupture. And that occurred on October 2nd, 2014, roughly 11 months after he was released and returned back to work. The commission found that Mr. Carrington was not entitled. The unanimous commission made the factual finding that though the kidney disease predated his accident, it was not disabling and did not restrict his ability to accept either the pre-injury full-duty work that he was doing or the light-duty work. What ultimately compelled his hospitalization and the corresponding refusal of that light-duty work was kidney failure, and that condition manifested after the accident. The transcript of the hearing before the deputy commissioner is particularly informative, and specifically on page 45 of the appendix, Mr. Carrington said, in response to my questions, everything was fine. You were able to fully function without any restrictions whatsoever. Answer, yes. Question, okay, so even though you had this kidney disease, you weren't disabled from it. Answer, right. Question, it had not manifested itself until the following year when you had to go back to VCU. Answer, yeah. We go on to page 47. That was a change in your circumstances that was different than what you had experienced before. Answer, yes. Your hospitalization had nothing to do with your work-related injury. It was for your kidney. Yes. The kidney disease predated the accident, but it was not disabling, and it did not impact his ability to to earn either his pre-injury earnings or his light-duty earnings that were paid at full wages. And the commission found significant that, and quoting from their opinion, the claimant's two-plus decades of working for the employer with the kidney disease but without associated restrictions, quote, we cannot ignore that the condition did not prevent the claimant's acceptance of the light-duty work. Only after many months of steady employment did the disease progress to the point where it compelled the claimant to discontinue his employment. And the commission also found significant that concession that I just read to you, that but for his kidney failure, he would have remained employed. So, in that backdrop, the commission found that the reinstatement of disability benefits would violate the fundamental principles underlying Doane, that of converting the Act into a form of health insurance or imposing liability under the Act for a condition unrelated to the employee's work. The decedent's candid testimony established that he was able to do both his pre-injury work and he was able to do his light-duty work. Carrington himself testified that he was in good health. So these factual findings of the commission should be binding upon appellate review. This court considers the evidence in the light most favorable to the party prevailing below, in this case the employer. Admittedly, conclusions of the commission on questions of law or mixed questions of law and fact are not binding on review. But in this case, what we have here is the administrator of the claimant's estate seeking to get from this court is a different factual finding. Now, looking at some of the cases that have been cited, if we look at the Hyatt case, and the Hyatt is a commission case, Hyatt versus Lowe's of Chesapeake. It's not binding on this court, but it is instructive. The commission in Hyatt stated, the employer is not responsible for the effect of unrelated conditions manifest or resulting only after a compensable accident, which is precisely what happened here. The kidney failure manifested well after the accident, 11 months after he returned to work. James versus Capital Steel is equally misplaced. The court adopted a very, and this is the Court of Appeals, adopted a very narrow view of Doane, as we do not read Doane to be as sweeping in its application as does the commission, but based on the facts of this case, the issue of James's pre-existing condition was not dispositive. Credible evidence in that record established that his refusal of vocational rehabilitation did not turn on the pre-existing conditions. So we have the commission, in a unanimous opinion, having weighed the evidence and rejected the application suggested by the appellant. He found it significant that while Mr. Carrington had a disease, it was not disabling in any way, shape, or form before the accident or before he undertook light-duty employment. And based on that, we would submit that the commission was correct in its decision, and the Court of Appeals did not commit error below when it affirmed the factual findings of the commission. And with that, unless there are any questions, I will sit down.
All right. Rebuttal?
Thank you. Mr. Carrington, prior to his second kidney transplant that ultimately disabled him in October 2014, he had returned to his wage, his hourly wage. I believe the testimony of Mr. Carrington was that he was working 40 hours a week, again in this different job, the selective employment job, only using one arm. Before the accident, he testified 60, 70 hours a week. There was a noticeable change in that job. This is not a case where he had returned to his pre-injury job, lifting bathtubs, working 60, 70 hours a week. He was working one-armed in this capacity. And then a progression of his pre-existing condition.
But the arm problem was a work-related accident, not a kidney accident. So what difference does it make? In other words, the restrictions he had at the time that sent him to light duty was 100% based upon not a pre-existing asymptomatic disease, but rather a work-related injury to his arm. So explain the relevance of your last point.
The ultimate conclusion is an unjustified refusal of that selective employment under 65.2510, which means that Mr. Carrington's ongoing benefits are barred. He can't any longer recover his disability benefits. And in the instance that he can go back to employment, if it was that case, if he was disabled for 1 month and could no longer do that work, and the commission told him that he could, he had unjustifiedly refused that job and he could no longer come back to that job because the employer would not bring him back, he's left with one arm in the workforce with an inability to get back to where he was. So again, that's where we would ask the court to apply the liberal construction of the act, in this instance, to the two-cause rule, which I believe in this instance, Commissioner Newman stated that strict application of DOME was applied here. Also, I just would like to make a point as to the progression of this pre-existing condition. Logically, that's kind of the only way it would unfold. Otherwise, if a pre-existing condition did not worsen, then it would never come up in such a context. Unless there's any further questions, the appellant rests on his argument. And I apologize for the citation.
All right.
Thank you.
The court will be at recess until 10 minutes till 11.
All rise.